Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at KHOI Community Radio, round the kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a membership-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmersofiowa.org.
Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we'll talk about an amazing thing to do with grapes. We'll find out how to make a traditional grape and nut candy just in time for the holidays. And we will visit with Sharon and Austin Stewart and talk about their new food adventure. Yes, we will. We'll be talking with them about crepes. So, October is known as the time of the harvest moon. It's also known as the time of the grape moon or the wine moon. In the country of Georgia, that's the country of Georgia, they've been growing grapes for a long, long time. And they have a long time traditional way of making grape and nut candy called cicerella. The cicerella. There's a h in there. I haven't worked on that yet, but I've learned to say cicerella. I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it says cicerella is a traditional candy shaped like a candle. A candle. The main ingredients are grape must, or grape juice, and the leftover parts of grapes, nuts and flour, walnuts, hazelnuts, and almonds. And occasionally raisins are threaded onto a string, dipped in thickened grape juice, and dried in the shape of a candle. Gheorghe Chiladze is from Georgia, the Republic of Georgia. He now lives here in central Iowa. He's a long way from home, but he cooks, and he invited Donna and I to his house to see and taste the making of cicerella. Here we are in Gio's kitchen. Gio, tell us what this is called.
This is called the tatara, and we are trying to make cicerella.
Wait, this is a Georgian specialty, right? From the Republic of Georgia.
This is a traditional thing to do with grapes, right, Gio?
Yeah, it's very traditional, and it's done every year after the harvest of the grapes. In Georgia, we are just making wine, and we are making sweet juice, and we are making cicerella. Cicerella is an essential part of the Christmas and New Year's Eve in Georgia.
It's basically a kind of candy.
It's kind of healthy candy, yes. So, it's just fruits, like grape juice in this case, and flour, and walnuts, or any other kind of nuts, if you want to use other kind of nuts.
Well, you start with, we did this yesterday, we took walnut pieces, not entirely halves, but all kinds of pieces, and we took needles, and we punctured each piece and strung it on a string till it's about maybe 8 inches to 10 inches long. So we have these things hanging. It's the walnuts on a string, basically. Like
it
a
is.
Little necklace of irregular teeth or something.
Right. Think of stringing popcorn, but we're not stringing popcorn. This is the base of what this wonderful grape stuff is going to go over. Ah, yes. And I assume that walnuts are easy to come by in Georgia.
Oh, yes, they are really common. So you drive around the roads and you see the walnut trees all around. So it's very common to have this, I suppose you call it British walnuts or
English
walnuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these are the walnuts that we have. We don't have the black walnuts there. And we use a walnut in Georgian cuisine a lot. And one of the ways to use the walnuts is to make cicerellas. So
yesterday we strung the walnuts, and I don't know, looks like we've got maybe 20 strings of walnuts there. And then Gio and Joe Monahan, they press the grapes. So we have fresh pressed grapes, and we don't really know what, they're not Concord is all I can tell you. They came from the ISU Hort farm. So yesterday they pressed them into really fresh, delicious, we loved it, grape juice. So then Gil boiled the grape juice down till it was like 50% reduced. Is that about right, Gil? Yeah.
Around half of this is reduced. So we are just waiting until it will cool down. And once it's cooled down to the room temperature, we are adding the flour.
So just plain old white flour.
Plain old white flour in this case. So.
This is a real surprise because surprisingly a lot of white flour is sifted into this thickened, cooked down grape juice.
Yeah, and now it's looking sort of like slightly mauve wallpaper paste, wouldn't you say?
I trust him. I trust Gio implicitly.
Well, and plus it smells. You can smell the grape. It smells really nice.
So these chichellas are going to end up looking like candles, like lumpy grape candles.
So now it's like quite gooey, quite heavy to stir. It needs a lot of force, to be honest. And the color is getting back, so you are still getting like this nice red, deep red color that was originally there. And
I'm sticking with mauve.
It's mauve right now, but but it's getting darker.
It's getting darker, and pretty soon we are going to start taking these walnuts and starting to dip inside. And it's so thick you cannot just put inside. It's not like a liquid, so
no.
You need to like push with the spoon.
Oh, that's what I was trying to figure out, how we dip them, so to speak.
Yeah. Do you see the color, how it's changed? So it's getting
darker. Oh, yeah,
darker,
I see the darker pieces.
Darker pieces. So it's cooking still, so it's not ready yet. So we need still some time to make it to cook a little bit more, and it kind of gets this nice, reddish color. And
is it going to continue to thicken, or this is the texture?
This is a texture that we need right
now.
Oh,
okay.
So it's just like, it's not cooked yet. It's a little bit more time, and it will be like completely cooked and ready for making chuchela. Okay.
Now, Gio is picking up a string of pecans and attempting to squish it down into this stuff. It looks very much like caramel, but it's purple caramel.
Right, it's about the consistency of when you're making caramel. It's not quite as hot, though, thank goodness, although I'm sure it could give you a good burn. Okay, so he holds onto the string. He lays the strung nuts on the top of it and kind of forces the glop over it with a paddle. Now he's holding the string up to let it drip. I wish we had a picture of this. It really does look like the fat kind of homemade candle that the 7-year-olds come home from school with or something when they're having a candle-making experience. Now he's taking it out, and it's going to hang back again from its string. And I'm guessing it just dries, right, Gio?
Yes. In a week, it will be done.
A week it has to dry at room temperature, right?
At room temperature. The fruit flies don't like it, or I know. They don't come to...
You're kidding.
Yeah. So they go to anything else in the kitchen, but not come to...
Do you think
this.
It's because it's so cooked? It doesn't have any live enzymes in it.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
I don't know. Whatever is
okay, it's fruit fly proof, apparently.
So it's a fruit fly proof. That's the most important part. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, whoever I want to try next...
Okay, Joe, you give it a try.
Again, pushing it down into this caramel-like stuff.
And plus, like you
end up with sort of a purple thing that looks like a... Well, actually, it sort of looks like a very sweet sausage, too.
Now, this is also, Gio, this is a preservation technique, right? Because these guys, once they're dry, they can hang for months and months, right?
Yes, once it's dry, you can keep it for months. Like we normally like do it during the harvest period in Georgia, which is late September, early October, and then we keep these chuchelas until New Year, just storing outside. Not fridge needed, nothing is needed, and you can keep it for the whole year or even a couple of years without any problems.
But what about all your neighbor kids coming over and eating them all?
Oh, yes, you are eating it before your neighbors come.
Okay.
It's so good.
Tell us how you eat them and what you eat them for.
So we eat it for Christmas, definitely. This is a big treat for Christmas and New Year's Eve. We just have it as a snack, as a sweet snack. And normally we just eat it instead of eating, chocolates here or something like this. This is our, like, chocolate or our Snickers.
So once they're dry, you cut them into pieces and pull the string out?
Normally kids are love it so much. They just eat the whole thing. They're just holding it as a popsicle here. Do you know the, like, kids running with popsicle? Just imagine kids with, like, chuchela, the whole, like, sausage holding in their hand and eating the whole, like, chuchela. But when you are serving on the table, sometimes people are cutting it. But
we started out with grape juice. How much grape juice did you start out with?
So I start with 2 gallons of grape juice, and then I reduce it slowly to 1 gallon. And once you get this, like, reduced, like, grape juice, then you are letting it to cool down to room temperature, and you are slowly adding the flour. So 1 pound of sieving the 1 pound of flour for 1 gallon of,
like,
reduced
white,
grape juice.
Super white refined flour. No, I think you probably need the kind you would make, like, a roux out of, something very dissolvable.
So flour into the grape juice, and then how much sugar?
I added some. I added about, like, half a cup of the sugar to make sure that this or gluey kind of everything sticks together nicely.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Great.
Oh, how funny. Oops. See, no. But my bottom didn't get covered here.
So that's a little bit technique. So you should, like, cover well and slowly pull out while you are taking out. Like,
okay, so I pulled it out too fast?
Yeah, so let me, like, try to make it like this. So spoon helping you, and you are, like, slowly, like...
See, there is a technique to it.
Look, they look kind of gooey right now, but they'll turn into wonderful things because I've tried these.
Yeah.
And when you serve them, Gio mentioned that you can just eat them as a lumpy stick, or you can cut them very nicely and serve them on a plate, which is a very pretty way to serve them.
This is amazing, and a lot of people.
This is a group activity.
Oh, it's like...
Multi-generational
neighborhood activities. That, like a cider press, you know? When you are making the cider, you just invite your friends around, and you just have this, like, festivity together. That's the same way you say...
So that was an adventure in Gio's kitchen making chuchela. And chuchela is great. It's a grapey sort of energy bar.
I have to say that the fresh pressed grape juice that we started with before we boiled it, we all had numerous glasses of it. It was easily as good as the apple cider that we pressed the week before at Lana's house. So we are just having a wonderful time imbibing the unfermented fruits of the harvest here.
Yes, we are. And like here, when there's too many apples, you find out things to do with them. And in Georgia, the country of Georgia, they've got lots of nut trees, fruit trees, and lots of grapes.
And they have a long history of making excellent wines.
Right. So here's something. You don't waste anything. So the mustard, the stuff that's left over, and the grape juice that you don't make into wine, you can make chuchela. And it sounds like you don't have any trouble getting people to eat it. So thanks to Gio for sharing that information with us. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. we're back. We're around the Donalana kitchen table, and we have some special guests today. We're going to be talking crepes.
Yes, we have Sharon and Austin Stewart, and they also have with them Philo. Okay, Philo is 6 months old, so he may be making auditory contributions. Yes. So Sharon and Austin are working on an enterprise in town, which is really fun. It's part of the Reliable Street something or other.
Yeah, we'll be Lockwood Cafe. Well, we are.
Oh, you'll be Lockwood Cafe as part of the Reliable Street. So Austin is in digital media in the art and design. Am I saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's on the faculty.
Yeah, I'm on the faculty in the art and visual culture department.
And Sharon has a wonderful way with food, I must say.
So
first, tell us what the Reliable Street, the whole enterprise is.
So Reliable Street, there's an old grain elevator on Reliable Street. And Reliable Street is not even...
It's right where the train tracks cross
North Dakota. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so some friends of ours purchased it, Lindsay and Elliot.
When was it built? It's an old 1950s grain elevator.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a mill and elevator built in 1955. It's gone through several different owners. The Heartland Co-op owned it for a while. Initially, it was Reliable Feed. There was also Doughboy owned it. And it's just gone through. And most recently, it was an import car auto shop Lindsay Neeson and Elliot Thompson purchased it.
And they are also from the Prairie Moon Alluvial Brewing family. So
yes,
quite a bunch of entrepreneurs around town. It's a wonderful social group, I must say, also. It's poured concrete, right?
Yeah.
The structure initially at how many tons of concrete?
I don't know the numbers, but I know they have to do that in a continuous pour. And so it's steel reinforced, poured concrete, and it...
Yeah. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's going to be there for a while.
Right. So it's lovely that a new creative purposing is happening to this building rather than it just being another set of derelict towers in our countryside.
And this part of town is particularly interesting because it was part of the Township of Ontario before it got annexed into Ames. And so where Reliable Street is located, there's around the corner. What are the businesses that are over there, Austin?
There's Winkler Paint. And I think C&H has a location over there as well, and there's a storage facility as well.
But this used to be essentially the main street of Ontario. And so in an interesting kind of turnaround, we're kind of bringing back some of the cultural, making it a cultural center again, a main street, if you will, of that part of town.
So the initial concept is for gallery space?
We're kind of doing it. The process of bringing the place back in stages.
Yeah, the first stage was cleaning it out and getting rid of all the old junk cars.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Well, or at least moving them. So the second stage, I guess, which we're calling the first stage, is to open a cafe and a gallery space, with the idea being that it will change the way that space is used and allow it to have allow for public access. And also allow it to kind of become an arts center, if you will. And in that, also food, obviously.
Yeah. Food. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the idea of having the cafe and the gallery together in that space in what used to be Ontario Village is to create a arts-centered community space. Where there's no walkable services or anything in that part of Ames. It's about at least a mile or mile and a half to the nearest grocery store or gas station. And so providing some local services there was another part of this goal.
And you already have some art installations on the lawn, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, there's art installations on the lawn, and those continue being added to and changing over time. We also have a community garden. And so all summer we had free vegetables available for anybody in the community. There's also a free thrift store there, the Always Open Thrift Store, which is like a 10-by-12 shed that people can freely drop off or pick up clothing. And so people will go shopping. We've seen people stop by, go to the thrift store, grab some stuff, go to the community garden, grab some vegetables, and then take off. And so it's already functioning in that capacity.
Yeah, and then with regards to the arts, Shift was brought on, which was a project done by the architecture department. One of their studio classes last spring built a play sculpture. And so it's similar to the one, if people remember, last year at Raymond Gardens, there was 2x2 is what it was called, I believe. And so this last year, they designed something similar, but with the intent of it being to be outside and then also to really encourage different forms of play. And it's been really popular with a lot of, I would say all ages, actually, but particularly kids love to come out and play around on that.
I visited the Lockwood Cafe, and when I saw the play structure out front, I thought, well, you named the cafe because it's like the wood is all locked together. That's it. It's Lockwood Cafe. It's this wood sculpture, and it's very, very nice. So tell me more about the Lockwood Cafe.
So Lockwood Grain and Coal was one of the first buildings on the property, and it was there before the grain elevator was built. And so when we were first kind of digging into the history of the space.
And the railroad was there.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we were first digging into the history, we found that, and it just clicked right away. Something that I think all of us are passionate about is understanding the history of things and wanting to kind of incorporate the past into the future and kind of bridge between old and new. So that just became an obvious name. And, yeah. And then from there, So Lockwood started out as a wholesale. I make simple syrups for Morning Bell and Wheatsfield. And so that's Lockwood's
simple syrups that they use in their coffees,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're just quickly say what the flavors are like. The profiles are lovely.
So we've done a lot of different things. We really try to make it seasonal. So we've done anything from like a floral fusion, which is lavender, a little bit of rose to kind of keep away the soapy flavor. And then we do like a nice cardamom. We've done chai, where we get all of our spices and herbs from Littlewood's tea shop here on Main Street. And caramel and chocolate and, you know, all the normal stuff too. But basil was fun this summer.
Basil and coffee.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. Basil iced coffee.
With cream.
Obviously.
Yes.
Okay. That's a no-brainer.
So, you know, I have to say, as an older member of the community, for me, it is a lot of fun to see your generation start all these businesses, like, you know, of course, Alluvial and Morning Bell and Littlewood's and now the Reliable Street, and how you all support each other and interact so well, like a community, you know? I mean, it's really, yeah, really fun.
Well, and it's the idea that if we are all supporting each other, mm-hmm, we can all grow together. So I worked at Morning Bell when Nadav first opened up the shop there, and got to learn all about his coffee, and then I'm friends with Kristen, so obviously we want to support her as well.
That's Littlewood's herbs.
Yeah, and she does an amazing job with herbs and tea blends.
And both of those businesses are right on Main Street.
Yeah, and so incorporating those, and, you know, the idea that there's somehow competition is just totally not true at all, because if we are all supporting each other, we're all growing together.
Yes, and we've already cooperation.
Seen yeah.
Survival of the most cooperative.
Yes. Together we are, yes, whatever that is saying.
Yes,
yeah.
No,
something along those lines.
It's important.
Yeah.
So what do we can we find at the cafe? Donna and I visited the cafe last weekend, and it's a very unique place. Describe it.
This is the interim cafe.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So we went from selling the syrups to making a cart. And the cart is a push cart. And so we got that certified with the state. And with that were certain limitations. And we're big believers that limitations breed creativity. And one of the limitations was whatever we made had to be cooked completely on site. And because we wanted to use local produce and local goods as much as possible, one of the limitations with that was, well, that and we wanted to make it affordable. We knew that we couldn't really do a lot of local meats. Philo has an opinion about that as well. I don't know if you can hear him in the background. But so we've opted to be vegan and vegetarian. And in doing so, anything that we were going to prepare had to be cooked fully on site Yeah. I think Philo's going to leave the interview for the moment. It's just too opinionated. Too many things to say. So with cooking things completely on site, we decided to do the crepe griddle because the crepes allow us to cook something completely, and we can add whatever fresh vegetables, and it just makes an easy way to make creative, fun food. So we do crepes and then coffee.
And there is a vegan option, but the crepes are loaded with beautiful eggs.
Yes, they are.
They are yummy. Lana and I, we went for a visit, and we had a pour over, and we each had a crepe. And what did I have? Oh, the classic cheese and egg.
Yeah, cheese and egg.
And Lana had the sweet one.
Was it apple crisp, or was it apple that
it was
day?
Apple.
Yeah.
But then the vegetable, what sort of vegetables go inside the crepe?
So it really depends on whatever comes in our CSA that week or what is fresh and available otherwise. We work with Julia Lacewing Farms and get her CSA. And so anything from that we try to use first. And then outside of that, whatever is in season. We also have a garden in our front yard that we've tried to keep up with. So the cafe has helped with that.
Very good.
And the vegan version, which I thought was delightful, is a dosa. She uses a dosa recipe.
Oh, what is a dosa?
So a dosa is a southern Indian crepe. It's the batter we use is rice and lentils, and they're fermented, so they have almost like a sourdough flavor to them.
Yeah, and they kind of... The dough is a little fluffy.
It is, yeah.
And I was so pleased to see how well it worked on the crepe griddle.
It took us a little time to figure that out. It was just in the last 2 weeks that we finally got the dosa working. At first, it was it went from a beautiful dosa on a crepe griddle to a pile because it would just stick every time. But we learned the secret was adding the right amount of liquid to the dosa batter, and then using oil around the outside once we spin the dosa allows it to keep from sticking, and then keeping the.
Well, when you watch her make your crepe, it looks incredibly easy. But having made crepes myself, I'll tell you it's not. Let's say Sharon has a smooth technique. It's really and it's fun for children. And,
it's a fun practice.
And Lana and I noticed that okay, so you're open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, from what time to what time?
From 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Whew, that's a long day. Yeah. So when we were out there on a Thursday morning, which was one of those lovely sunny fall days, which we've only had a few of, but it was full of mothers with children playing on the play structure out on the lawn.
It's nice because you can sit and have a coffee and a crepe, and you can watch the kids play while still feeling like you have a little bit of sanity and you're not disrupting, right? Because that's one of the problems with when you – it's not problems. It's an issue, I guess, when you take your kids anywhere is you're always – or at least I am always very conscious of, am I disrupting other people's experiences?
Well, and to say it's kid-friendly is almost an understatement. Sometimes you even wear Philo at work, don't you?
Absolutely.
On the back or the front or something?
Yeah, I'll strap him on in the back and carry him around with me. He's quite the helper.
And the menu is kid-friendly. I mean, children eat crepes.
Yeah. I mean, they eat pancakes. They eat crepes.
Yeah.
I want to mention here that Donna and I visited this fine establishment, and it is an open-air establishment. Right. There's plans for a more weatherproof restaurant in the future. But for right now, you walk up to the grain elevator. You think, grain elevator? Crepes? How can this work? But on the south-facing side of the grain elevator, I don't know what the structure was originally used for, but there's some sort of...
Kind of like a front porch or
cover,
something.
Cover. Yeah. Some sort of cover. And just surprisingly so, it captures the sun quite nicely. And so it's this open-air place.
Oh, right. It's with, a south exposure,
with,
isn't it?
Yeah. With Sharon and her little cart on one end, being a full-size little restaurant down there, but the rest of the covered-over space is comfortable chairs and tables, and it just sort of moves out into the grass right in front and the play structure, and you're far enough away from, well, it's a very unbusy street.
Yes,
anyway, Reliable Street is not one of your main thoroughfares, but it is a street, little street there, and it is a really fine place to sit, enjoy the sun, talk, watch the kids play.
Coffee, and, tea, or crepes.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do that.
It's a lemonade. We have lemonade, too.
Oh, it's a really a perfect menu for your situation, I have to say. So, did you get your permits to move forward with the full build-out?
So tomorrow evening, actually, we go before planning and zoning. We're applying for a use change of the space. And once that is decided, assuming that they move forward, then we'll be in a position to start pulling permits and actually working towards the build-out. So there's, you know, the common question is when will you be open on the inside? And there is absolutely no way I can answer that. I have no clue. But in the meantime, we've got this kind of European-style outdoor cafe, and the idea is we're going to stay open until it's cold, which I think last night we decided was going to be the end of November.
Yeah.
Just to give us...
Oh, you're going to go all the way through November.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine.
We figure, you know, coffee will keep you warm, crepes keep you full. We're going to have blankets out there, really kind of capture that European-style cafe, outdoor cafe that, you know... You sit and have a coffee and enjoy whatever weather that happens to be.
So you're talking about a build-out, but it's more like a build-in. You're going to build into the existing massive structure that's not going anyplace.
Tons and tons and tons of concrete. This is going to be an interesting design challenge.
Yeah, we're definitely going to kind of capture that industrial vibe, which is already there. But Austin's done a lot with building, and he's actually the one that built the cart. And so he'll be instrumental in the build out. And so the idea when we close the outdoor cafe, it'll be time that we want to start working towards the build out. So we've got...
Well, tell us what your vision of the build out is.
Okay. So, yeah, we're going to do, obviously, crepes and coffee. We'll add a full coffee bar, so we'll have espresso and the likes. And then for food, we really want to keep things simple. So we want to keep the crepes.
That's my motto for any restaurant.
Yeah, simple. Do a few things, but try to do them really well.
So
we want to do bowls of food, the idea being that you can get a healthy, full meal at a reasonable cost. And so we're going to keep with the vegetarian and do, you know, grain bowls, salad bowls. Just can it soup bowls? Can it be put in a bowl? Is it a one dish option? And then we're hoping to do paninis as well and crepes, and that will be pretty much it. We're wanting to do one of the things that was really important to me in terms of aesthetic was that there was a bar to sit at. I worked at a coffee shop in Gunnison, Colorado, and there it's a small town of 5,000 people, and in the wintertime it becomes like an island because there's a pass to get out no matter which direction you go. And so we kind of all hunker down for the wintertime. And I learned so much about the community and became so connected because there was a bar that people could come during the mornings and lunch. And
right. We're not talking liquor. We're just talking a structure.
A physical bar.
Like a communal table, basically.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And in doing so, it just opened up so many lines of communication, and people that sat next to each other that maybe wouldn't have talked to each other otherwise became friends across the bar, you know? So kind of that idea of the pub, but only in the morning.
The lunch counter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we really want to incorporate that. So one of the things with the food, one of the limitations that's breeding the creativity is that we want all of the food to be able to be prepared behind the bar. So rather than having kitchen staff, we can really, you know, have staff that can work the counter and make food at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the...
Very practical, Sharon.
So you'll be moving, in a sense, you'll be moving the cart inside and maybe making it a little bit longer.
Yeah,
and,
pretty much.
I was amazed at all the things that you could get on your cart. I mean, it didn't seem very big, but Donna and I had our elbows on it. We were sitting at the bar.
Oh, yeah, we sat right there and watched the crepe making happen.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
That's a fun... Great. Sometimes it feels a little bit small when you're behind it.
You're listening to KHOI. This is Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about good food around this kitchen table. You can find out more about this fine radio station and this fine radio show by going to khoifm.org. You can find out about the radio station. There's a lot of fine local programming done by real-life people that you know and love in this community. And you can find more about the Donalana Kitchen. We have archives. We have recipes. Support this fine community radio station. We're talking to Sharon and Austin Stewart about something called the Lockwood Cafe, a fine new establishment that is just budding on the northwest edge of Ames.
Edge, you're not kidding. It's out there on the edge of town.
Like Sharon said, this is part of a community that used to be known as Ontario. And there's this kind of vestige of old buildings there, including this wonderfully massive grain elevator on Reliable Street.
Right on the railroad tracks.
Right on the railroad tracks. And there's an opportunity there to recreate a community. Right now, it's just, well, there's apartments and there's buildings and there's houses all the way around and there's a railroad track and there's a few businesses out there. You know, Winkler's painting is out there, I know for sure, and some others. Sharon, talk a little bit about how the local community, the neighbors, the people that are looking out their back door
that
and seeing you.
That quiet neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how are they reacting to all the goings-on at the grain elevator?
You know, I would say that by and large, we've had a lot of great support. Our neighbors directly across the street from us are regulars at the coffee shop. In fact, a few in that neighborhood come on a fairly frequent basis. And it's been neat to – there was a morning – it was probably like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I looked out, and it was pretty busy for me anyway. Like, you know, we're not a Starbucks.
She can be a one-person show.
Nor do we want to be a Starbucks. But I looked out, and the tables were all mostly full, and there were kids playing, and I realized that there were more people at Lockwood Cafe that I did not know prior to opening Lockwood Cafe than people that I did. And it was a really comforting feeling to know that we were being welcomed essentially into the community through that support. And, you know, with any new change to the community, there's always going to be a disruptiveness that just kind of happens because we are changing.
And what, people were attached to having the junk car sitting around all over there? Property values, folks. Come on.
So we did have some people that, you know, were not happy with the volume. There were some music shows there. And so we've really tried to figure out ways that we can work with our neighbors to have a really conducive space for community, but also a space that allows the arts space to grow, because that's something that Ames doesn't have a lot of, is working artist space. And artists by nature are not going, you know, they're not going to be the ones that hole up and are quiet and you never see, generally speaking.
Artists can be messy.
They can be a little messy.
And could be noisy.
But finding a balance where we're not disturbing, you know, the peace in the neighborhood is definitely something that's important to us. And finding ways to engage, you know, like when we got a couple letters of people that maybe weren't thrilled with the volume of some of the shows. But what was interesting is when I went and talked to them about their letters, both parties agreed that a coffee shop was a great thing to have in the neighborhood. And so I really think this space is going to offer kind of a liaison between the community and the arts as well.
Food.
You give people
everybody
food. Everybody needs
right.
food.
Right.
So one of the simple design concepts that we threw out early on was like, can we have the bathrooms be accessible through the gallery? That way, even if you're just there for a coffee, you kind of have to go through the gallery. Like,
oh, you
is there
tricky
a way
person,
that we
you.
Can just – yeah. Push the visibility
Good.
Of the arts
Good.
In this community.
Good idea.
So, yeah, it's been really fun to play with these ideas and concepts, and it's really forced a conversation amongst all of us involved in Reliable Street about what we do want to be a part of in terms of actively engaging the arts in this community.
So. Well, you had mentioned a concept that I thought was really a good idea. Of not putting a wall between the gallery space and the cafe, but actually putting a curtain so it could be opened up if you wanted to have more of an event space or a pop-up restaurant. I think that's a marvelous idea.
And I think the more flexibility we can have in how the space is designed, you know, we're not developers coming at this with pockets full of money, right?
No, like, and your kitchen is going to be pretty minimal, like
absolutely.
No hood.
Absolutely.
Just the minimal things. Well, because putting in those restaurant pieces of equipment can be frightfully expensive.
Yes.
Right.
So because we don't have pockets of money to throw at this project, we've kind of had to take the long path of getting things going. So the first year, pretty much all.
Hence the cart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great idea.
The first year, we spent a lot of time working on parking to get the language changed for our zone so that on-street parking can count towards our parking requirements. And what that did is it freed up a huge area, which is now the community gardens, mm-hmm. where we would have had to put a parking lot. And so it was one of those things where it's like, because we don't have money to just throw at the project and we're not looking at everything on a spreadsheet with a final dollar amount, we're looking at how can we make this project the best.
You're maximizing community participation.
Absolutely. And so so that took almost a full year, but you step back from that, and that year has allowed us a lot of time to talk and kind of plan and dream and put a lot
and
of...
This is not just Austin and Sharon. It's also Lindsay and Elliot
yes.
and other...
There's a slew of people. I mean,
yeah.
obviously, Lindsay and Elliot, they own the space, and there's actually five of us that make up a nonprofit, and we get together on a regular basis and talk about the projects and what's going on. So,
mm-hmm.
Lindsay's kind of taking the lead on the gallery space. Elliot is kind of big picture project manager. Dan DeGeese is part of the nonprofit. He's really great with being knowledgeable about what's happening in the city and
how to... Dan's really active on monitoring city council. Thank you, Dan.
Yes, we need Dan. And then Austin and I are more on the cafe end. So collectively, we have a lot of unique, different skills that when we come together, mm-hmm. we work really well together mm-hmm. and things can move quickly for us,
yeah.
which is slow compared to everybody else.
And part of, you know, the taking the long time to do this, we're really... in a way being forced to, but also enjoying the process of slow growth,
yeah.
right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's the minimum we need at this point? What's the minimum we need at that point? And with, I have a permaculture design certification, which started out as an alternative agricultural mm-hmm. model, but it's become a way people have used it to start thinking about spaces and layouts and designs in other forms. And so observation is like the first site. And if we would have been able to just jump right in, we would have made some horrible mistakes in the space.
You know, it sounds
we might
like
still. Don't get
yeah, well,
when I was teaching
obviously.
My son to drive, I kept saying, go slow, because any mistake that you make, and one is bound to make mistakes at the beginning of a new enterprise, the slower you're going, the less damaging the accidents are.
Yeah. And I feel like that speaks very truly to Lockwood mm-hmm. Cafe. I mean, we've started extremely slow, right? Like a cart, no advertising, just push it out, turn the lights on.
Right, but you're actually doing it. That's the, you know, I went there and I had a crepe. This is no longer just a concept. It's an actuality.
Yeah. And the slow, I mean, every week we've been busier than the week before, save the one weekend that the weather was just dreadful. And that's allowed us time to grow. So, yeah, we didn't have the dosa at first, but there's no way we could have done the dosa the first week. We were just trying to get crepes and coffee down. Mm-hmm. And then we added tea, and then we added lemonades. And so each week we've added things.
Delicious and creative things, I might add.
Well, thank you. That's the goal.
I'm very pleased with my experience there. And I want to encourage you. I also want to mention that even though you're restricting yourself to vegetarian, one does not go there and feel, oh, this is a vegetarian restaurant. Because crepes are by and large, vegetarian yeah. anyway. And actually, so will the bowls and the other things.
Absolutely.
So don't – if one is not a vegetarian, don't be hesitant. You're going to be thrilled with the food anyway.
So there's
and crepe batter is full of eggs.
It is the richest crepes that I have ever eaten. They are very eggy and quite delicious. And I have to say, she uses the coffee has cream in it. Not half and half. Not even 2%. It's cream, by golly. And it's
you ask
good
for cream. We'd like you to have
it
cream.
It is good. It is really, really good.
So there's a restaurant called the Waterfront?
Watercourse
in Denver. And it's a vegetarian vegan restaurant. And what I love about that place is you don't go there because you're vegetarian. You go there because the food's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
really want to kind of have that that kind of reputation. I mean, that's the goal, right?
No, the food is amazing. It's really it's a good, strong principle. It's like when I have vegan friends and all they're doing is eating meat substitutes, I'm going, excuse me, first of all, it's probably not very healthy. But in Hollywood, I had a client, Ed Begley Jr., who was a vegan. And so he would have a party, and I would try and come up with an all-vegan menu. In fact, I remember this is a thrilling moment for me when Robert Kennedy Jr. showed up. So it was Ed's birthday, and so I had to make a cake. So I made an olive oil cake. And you try to construct the menu just in the way you are, that you're not feeling it as a limitation. You're just featuring the vegetables and the grains. And you know, for Ed's cake, he also doesn't eat sugar, so it was really challenging. So I made an olive oil cake using egg replacer and honey. And by golly, it was really good.
So that, I mean, even like the example of the dosa, right? We didn't try to take a crepe batter and turn it into a vegan option. We tried to find something that's intentionally
vegan.
On its own, and it's designed.
And dosas are quite exciting, I have to tell you. I haven't had a dosa for 20 years. Here at Ames, get your dosas. Woohoo!
I've never heard of that.
I know, they're really good. It's very light and.
But also very filling. A dosa is surprisingly filling.
Yep, they're beautiful too. I mean, and it's not something, because the crepe griddles are bigger than a frying pan.
Yeah.
It's something that's very hard to make at home because a small dosa or a small crepe, I mean, you can do it.
Right.
But it's not the same as – because what's a crepe griddle? 12, 14 inches?
It's either 14 or 18. Like it's – because the whole thing I know is like 22.
Yeah, it's good sized. And that gives you the fold over that you need to make the layers of the crepe in a certain way.
And also to capture all of the ingredients inside and let it all kind of mold together.
So it's
delicious.
It is something, it's an addition to the community that is not easy to do at home. So thank you.
Well, my pleasure.
I'll be out there for the doses and the crepes.
So amazing things happening on Reliable Street. I have a question. I have not stuck my little nose into that big building that is the old grain elevator. I imagine it as just kind of this big silo. So tell me, what's in there now?
Thick cement. Tons of thick, heavy, dark cement.
Yeah, so it's beautiful.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Austin?
I was going to say it's a really beautiful space. there's the elevators, and then there's about six levels that would have had equipment and services on the side of it. And each of those spaces is really gorgeous. They're all absolutely full of pigeon defecation, but they're really gorgeous. The light that comes in there,
there's a second floor,
and I believe the cement floor between the first and second floor is like what 5 feet thick, something.
It's
insane.
Not 5 feet thick, but they have the weight limit posted, and it's 450 pounds per square foot.
Oh.
So it's just because it was the warehouse for the grain, and so they needed something that could handle all of that weight. Yeah.
So you could have a heavy duty dance hall with elephants on the second floor, right?
Yes,
and yeah, it would be fine.
Well, now you know our secret plan.
Yeah. Oh, goody! Yeah, Buffalo, maybe? Huh?
We're going to have Farnham and Bailey in there at some point.
Oh boy!
See, lots of wonderful things happening, and community being enhanced, and it's blooming, and it's right on the northwest edge of Ames, right along the railroad tracks where a grain elevator should be. I like it. It's sort of in my neighborhood.
Yeah, so right. And Lana's going to have her local coffee shop now.
Which is always well appreciated. Yes, it is. We've been talking to Sharon and Austin Stewart. They have a great, great adventure going, a food adventure. It's called the Lockwood
Cafe. To which we are all invited.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up and running. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
So stay tuned for the Lockwood Cafe on the northwest edge of Ames, Iowa. Here we are. Crepes.
Right.
Crepes.
And you find it by going, you go out North Dakota, right? Right off of 13th.
Yeah, we're just north of 13th on North Dakota. So if you're going on North Dakota, heading north, right before you get to the railroad tracks, if you look left,
you can't miss the grain elevator. Right.
Very good. Good cup of coffee. Good bunch of crepes. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Well, that was fun, Donna.
It was delicious, too.
Ah, yes. We've got a few upcomings happening here.
Yes, ever busy in Ames, aren't we?
Next week, Halloween is kind of creeping up on us, and we'll have a Halloween show, won't we?
We will. And I also would encourage, I know in my neighborhood, which is the downtown area, there are lots of very creative lawn decorations. It is so fun. I think half the houses in my block on Douglas have done some sort of, you know, not just where you go buy the Chinese stuff and you put it up in the yard. There's some of that too, but some other much more creative things. And I like the Halloween decorations even better than the Christmas decorations.
Yeah. Orange and black. Let's think of that. And we'll have some scary items here on the Donalana Kitchen. We'll have some advice and some exploration of some edge of the... How do you put that?
Okay. So Halloween, or what has become Halloween, what used to be Halloween, is traditionally the night when the... Let's see, what is it? The space between the worlds is the thinnest. Well, that's what it is.
And you'll find it next week, because our show is on Halloween next Tuesday.
Oh, yes.
Also, heads up, in the weeks to come, the fundraising time for this fine community radio station.
Oh,
fundraising
yes. Step
time for
right
KHOA.
Up. It will be your opportunity to support community radio.
Okay.
And we have a good time doing that, too.
Great. So thanks to Sharon. Thanks to Austin for being here and Philo, too.
Oh, Philo, yes. Who's finally crashed out.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Beatific child here.
Mm. Yes. They talked to us about the Lockwood Cafe. And thanks to Gio Chalatse for inviting us into his kitchen for the making and enjoying of Chinchilla.
Okay, I have to say, finally we were able to remember because Lana goes, Chinchilla. And I go, oh, right, okay, it's stuck in my brain.
It has
it was
nothing
good.
To do with chinchillas, but that's good.
You know.
Thanks to Gio for sharing that with us. And good future for the Lockwood Cafe. Oh, more upcomings. This weekend, the Central Iowa Barn Dance is having a barn dance. Go to cibd.org to find out more information. Treat yourself. Get a chance to be joyful and graceful with your neighbors. Yes, you do. You can dance. You can. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Thank you.